This is a podcast from Minute Media.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Pete.
And we are coming to you live from a couple of different places on the internet. We are live over on YouTube, a.k.a. The Tube. We're also live on Crowdcast, a.k.a. The Cast. Or maybe you'll listen to the podcast later, wherever you listen to podcasts. Wherever you're listening or watching, that's the coolest thing I've ever heard.
And in case you're wondering, Justin is in Florida. He is hiding out from his family at a casino, and we think maybe he has a gambling problem. So there's going on.
About 50% of those things are true. If you're turning in for the first time,
he's got a gambling problem. So you tell me what's wrong.
Our third co-host, Justin, is off this week. He is in Florida. He is at a casino. Whether he's gambling
or has a problem.
Open question. Definitely an open question. But folks, we have a great show for you tonight. And we have two great guests on the show that we're going to bring in later. But first, a couple of orders of business, other than the business we just talked about, of course. First one I wanted to talk about is we have been asking you folks, if there's a book you want us to review or a question you want to ask on the show, leave us a comment on iTunes. Hopefully a nice comment. We like those a little better, but we're not going to put any pressure on you, whatever you want to do, right? That said, we did get another comment request here. We've been getting some great requests for books to review that then we review on our Stack podcast. This is from Ramsey. The headline is Fun and Smart Comic Takes. I've been listening to this podcast for years. They are three savvy comic fans with a wide range of tastes and opinions, sharing their thoughts on comics and chatting to amazing creators, all buoyed by their comedy improv background, which lends the podcast a fast-paced, witty energy that makes it a fun listen. Definitely worth your time. I'd love the comic book guys to review Fab Pandora by Ramsey and Stefano Simone. And listen, here's the thing. He requested his own book, but I don't think that's outside the rules. So yeah. I do think, not on this week's Stack podcast, but we'll aim on next week's Stack podcast.
Didn't we talk about it when it came out, though?
I think we interviewed him about it, but we didn't review the book.
Yeah, all right.
So we had to like pretend we liked it and stuff like that. So now we can like really take the lid off.
I don't pretend. Jerks. We don't get paid any money, so there's no point in pretending.
That is
very
true.
To live with what we said.
Yes. So we will review that on a future Stack podcast, Fan Pandora. Again, if you want us to review a book, preferably a trade or something from the past or something like that, maybe that we missed it in some way.
Favorite single issue, you know, whatever.
Whatever it is. Hit us up, iTunes comments, leave us a comment there, and we will read it on the show and then review it on the show. Now, let's move over and talk about today's drink. This is very exciting. Our resident comic book club chef, Brett Macris, has been curating drinks for us.
Straight bullies.
And we are back to the Gotham City cocktail book this week with a seasonal holiday drink, the Sleigh Ride, based on Harley Quinn. I'll tell you what, two things about it. One, it's delicious. I had a little bit of it last night when I was making it, but you put it in the freezer overnight. I made the mistake of not taking it out quickly enough. So it's basically like a snow cone in a glass right now.
Wow.
It's getting a little liquid at the bottom, but
actually drinking. I don't know what that's so fake. Yeah, you're not
so good.
You're a horrible actor.
Thank you. Yeah. And I should mention, Pete's my agent, so he's being honest about this. Yeah. You take a cut. This actually is a really good drink. If anybody wants to make it, Stray Bullet shared individual servings in our Patreon Slack, patreon.com/comicbookclub. But the basic of it is it's dark rum, brandy, vanilla, sugar, and whole milk with a little bit of cinnamon and nutmeg on top. So it's like an eggnog, but not quite as thick. And then you put it in the freezer for a little bit, so it becomes like slushy. Real good stuff.
Oh, a little brandy, too.
Yeah, really good. Highly recommended. You love it, Pete. You like it a lot.
Yeah, it sounds delicious.
So there you go, and it tastes like you're drinking with Harley Quinn. That's the cool thing. Now, later in the show, we are going to have Marie Nicola is going to be here from Alt Pop Repeat, but we are going to bring in our first guest. He is the creator of the new book, Odd Yarns, which is on Kickstarter for just a couple of hours to go at this point. John Lazar. John, hello.
Hey,
how are
welcome
you?
Back.
I'm doing great. Hey, thanks so much for having me back. I'm glad everybody has survived another few months of the pandemic. I hope that keeps going for everybody.
Yeah, I really hope that keeps going too. Thanks so much.
Yeah.
It's the little things, like,
yes, it kind of is survival. The little things. I'm making a little bit of fun, but at the same time, you know what? Thank you. I appreciate it. Now, Odd Yarns is your latest Kickstarter. I'm looking at it right now. You got 37 hours to go as we're taping this. You've already blasted past your goal. You had a $1,500 goal. You're at $3,021. But this is a very fun project with two stories in it. Talk us through the general idea of Odd Yarns.
So Odd Yarns is sort of a loving tribute and a little bit of a satire of the old Marvel Silver Age double features books, most particularly Strange Tales. Mm-hmm. The basic premise we've got on this book is what if Nick Fury and Stephen Strange switched jobs? Uh-huh. Yeah, so we've got, as you can see, this great, I love Lane Lloyd stuff so much, this great crazed extreme version of, you know, that old Sergeant Rock Nick Fury, World War II type, just kicking it through a Steve Ditko alternate dimension, while we have the elite surgeon, Winston Weird, very, very subtle take there, you can't tell.
Yeah.
Getting into his own set of trouble, which we will leave for readers of the book to discover.
Nice. Now, I know this isn't necessarily you, but one thing that I really love about this book that I thought was very fun, the art style is very reminiscent of Mike Oeming in particular. Was that something that you were looking for when you were putting it together, or did it just kind of happen?
The whole reason this project happened is because we found Lane Lloyd was available. And you guys,
I believe you. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Like, you guys reviewed my last book, Marguerite Versus the Occupation, which was a World War II, very realistic story. And we initially found Lane when we were looking for an artist for that. Which would have been some kind of jagged casting, but we liked their stuff so much that when they became available a few months later, we just decided we had to jump on the opportunity and make a comic book with them while we had the chance. And I'm super, super grateful we did.
Yeah, I gotta say, we see a lot of like Kickstarter stuff, a lot of people kind of putting out creator own, but man, the panel layouts, the humor, it all really jumps off the page. This is such a fun read, and this is what I want from like kind of a Kickstarter. I want something that feels like indie and cool, where they're pushing things as far as like, you know, different kind of panels and different kind of like stuff on the page, and then also funny stuff. I think this is a really great package you have.
Thanks so much. And like, fun is exactly what we're going for. It's again, just the, if you're working with Lane, you're going to get fun. So it was just a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun to lean into their art style.
Well, when you're doing that, I mean, talking about that in particular, obviously, like you mentioned, it's sort of a Kirby pastiche going on here a little bit. Is that something that you're able to have come across in your writing style at all? Or is it more just leading on your artist in this case?
You know, definitely had some fun doing doing little homages to the Silver Age writing style. As you can see right here, Russian, such power mustn't fall into communist hands. the pomp of it. I mean, I've always been a Marvel zombie, and I found my way to Silver Age stuff pretty quickly when I became a fan, and it's just so the enthusiasm of it, it's so contagious and fun. And at the same time, I learned in trying to do a little homage to it that there's a lot of really effective storytelling in there too. So it was a lot of fun, and also it was also a good learning experience.
Cool.
Speaking of learning experiences, now that you have done a couple of Kickstarters at this point, what have you learned? What have you kind of taken away from those experiences that potentially you will apply to future ones?
To future Kickstarters? Well,
never do it again. Is that the main lesson?
I mean, it's been good because I mean, I'm a little worn out. This is my third Kickstarter in a little over a year. So it's definitely like all of the things that are not making comics, I'm kind of burned down on right now. But at the same time, learning how to pitch a story, how to sell it, how to write copy to grab people's attention, it's all stuff that I'm going to need to learn to do to get where I'm getting. So, and the thing about the Kickstarter is it's nice to, you know, there's an audience out there waiting to be found, and you've got to grab their attention. And we've been lucky so far in being able to fund all four of our projects. Yeah, thank you. I'm very grateful. But like, it is exhausting, but at the same time, like, all of those things that are not writing comics might not be as much fun, but they're important and they got to be done.
Yeah. I mean, it also teaches you a really important lesson in terms of how to efficiently seal envelopes and label them. And that's also an important life skill as well.
Bro, I've been waiting because, you know, my stuff's been sitting on a boat out in California in the line, you know, the backup. Uh-huh. It just got sent out to me yesterday after for Marguerite for the last one. Wow. So yeah, I've got like there's shipping supplies all over this room in this apartment right now. And yeah, man, I can't wait.
Well, I mean, given that, then, since you have done these three Kickstarters, and granted they have been successful, so that points to potentially you could do a fourth one and that could be successful. Is there another avenue? Is there something else you would want to hit? Or a different way of distributing these things for a potential fourth project?
I mean, I would love it if somebody else was doing this work for me. Oh, yeah. But you know, that's also like, as somebody starting out, you know, that's the other great thing about Kickstarter is, you know, as a writer, like, everything you hear is to break in, you got to make comics. Yeah. And it's, you know, in terms of knocking on doors and just singing for your supper, which is what you're doing when you're starting out, saying like, you know, we've had four successful Kickstarters. It's a conversation starter. Like it helps a little bit. So I'm definitely open to other avenues for publishing. And if anybody out there was willing to offer me some, I am not difficult to get a hold of.
This is interesting. We actually have an opportunity from Marvel Comics, but you're still going to have to put them in envelopes yourself.
Every single one.
Sorry about that. And
can't wait.
Before we let you go, just to jump back to the Kickstarter with 37 hours to go, or whenever people are listening to this, probably a little less than that. What potentially, hey, nice. What will people get if they're pledging this project?
Well, we've got our previous books. Again, the previous one, which we covered with you guys, Marguerite versus the Occupation, is a really lovely little World War II action fable. Great art by Casey Quevedo. I really recommend that book. I've been very lucky with my collaborators. They're doing the heavy lifting. And it's a good book. We've also got a great, I think you put up the art a little earlier, we've got a great alternate cover version. Mm-hmm. Since this is a double feature title, we're publishing it as a flip book like Marvel Comics Presents, which means you get twice as many alternate covers. We've got one by Jason Muir, I don't actually know, who is on By the Horns. From Scout Comics, which is a beautiful book. Yeah. And then the other cover is by Alex Cormack, who did Road of Bones and Sea of Sorrows at IDW. If you haven't read these books,
they're really good.
Absolutely have to. Beautiful, beautiful horror artist. I think he's got a book coming out this week, Crimson Cage. It's a wrestling book. I'm going to hoard any of the alternate covers that we don't sell because they're so pretty, but that's all available on the Kickstarter, and you should check it out.
Awesome. Cool. John, congratulations again. So great having you back here.
Yeah. Good thanks luck. For coming back.
Fingers crossed. Next time we have you back, it's not for a Kickstarter.
I'll multitask. If you don't mind, if I'm packing the packages while we talk,
definitely
not a
problem. That'd be a lot easier for me. Yes.
Yeah. All right. Have a great time.
Thanks so much, guys.
Yeah. Take care of yourself. Care.
Yeah. All right. Once again, the project is called Odd Yarns. It's on Kickstarter right now, at least for the next day and a half or so. So definitely check it out because it's super fun. Like you said, it Pete, is. The art's great. The style's great. It's a really fun pastiche.
There's humor. You get it once you pick it up. It's super clear about what it's doing, what it's saying. So it's easy to hop on board and enjoy.
Awesome. Let's bring in our second guest now. She is one of the hosts of Alt Pop Repeat, a pop culture podcast that is very cool, way cooler than our podcast, in fact. I mean, I'm not joking.
True. Yeah, I know. It's 100% That's why I'm true. Laughing. Yeah.
But her name is Marina Cola. She does the podcast with Chrissy Newton. They are broadcast on the radio, I believe, in Canada. She will probably correct me on that once she gets in. But they recently did a show with Kevin Eastman of TMNT fame, talking about the cross pollination between counterculture and also comics culture. That'll be very interesting to talk about once she makes her way over in here. But oh, there we go. Hello. Hey, how's it going? Sorry, we interrupted your noodles. I apologize.
This is like I'm starving. I'm so hungry. You don't even understand. Sometimes the days get away from you. You know, you have a day job and listen, then you have a content creation job.
You have your noodles. I'm going to drink this definitely drinkable cocktail that I made.
Oh, that looks fantastic.
So good. It's still so good. It actually is, again, really good, but I can't drink it yet. It's still frozen solid. Marie, thank you so much for coming on the show. Very excited to have you here.
It's my pleasure.
Like we said in the intro, what I love about your show is not only does it do a deep dive into history, but it also presents really interesting different looks at pop culture and counterculture. Where did the idea first start? Was it you and Chrissy getting together and talking about it? Did it come from another source? How did it begin?
It was basically us. We both have a love for things that are paranormal. Chrissy is a huge, huge pundit within the UFO circles. And I am a pop culture historian. And so we just met up after we hadn't seen each other for a number of years, and we reconnected. And as we sat enjoying our drinks and having chats, Chrissy was like, look, I want to produce a podcast. Are you interested? And I had just come off a project called Nana Marie. And it was a live streaming talk show. It was the first of its kind. And what we did was we talked about internet culture and digital trends in particular. But it was a little ahead of its time. At the time, any live stream that was happening was talking heads, and it wasn't necessarily a produced show. We ended up building an entire studio for this project, and we had 8 cameras running at one time, a director switching. It was a production. But then, you know, that dried up and I needed something new to work on. And Chrissy was like, hey, I really would love to do a podcast. Are you interested? And of course I said yes. And the rest is history. So we worked on it. Originally, the concept was going to be more about paranormal and UFO. But as we started to go through this and I was allowed to kind of let my, as I said, pop culture historian flag fly, the show evolved to be more documenting how counterculture has turned into pop culture, which is, I think, dope, because nobody talks about it. They're just like, oh, pop culture is here. Let's take a look at Miley Cyrus. She's twerking on the MTV Awards. Hey, let's take a look at the Marvel Cinematic Universe. This is really crazy. Like, but people don't really understand that there's a historical context to a lot of this work and a lot of these projects. It's not like it's created in a vacuum. It's not like pop culture just happens. You know?
Well, like you're touching on, a lot of this stuff, you know, and I'm sure you touched on this a little bit on your show, but there's always a point where it's like, oh, this is this cool underground thing that only me and 5 of my friends know about. And then suddenly it pops through into pop culture and it becomes this mainstream thing. And that's always this weird, frustrating point for people. Like, we've definitely felt that, I think, with comics that we've reviewed on the show, where we push very heavily and then suddenly everybody's talking about it. Like, but we were talking about it
first. And that's exactly kind of what Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles was. It was like this middle finger to like making fun of that. Like the Foot Clan is like making fun of the hand and like that. And then it became this thing, and it was this animated kind of joke of what it was. And it, like, someone who was a hardcore fan of the black and white comics, I was kind of like, my thing got famous and now it sucks. It's like, oh, what do I do? But I still watched every episode. No, I mean, it doesn't suck, but it's different. It's like, you know, all of a sudden Michelangelo.
I thought it sucked. Go ahead.
Well, yeah, but I mean, it was, you know, this animated kind of like brightened up thing that was not the hardcore ninja stuff that it was in the beginning.
Oh, 100%. Because I mean, whenever it was going on television in the 80s, there were certain restrictions that a lot of productions had to abide by. And it's the same restrictions that kind of made He-Man and Masters of the Universe this diluted kind of. And it's funny because as a child, like as an adult, thinking back, I'm like, oh my gosh, He-Man for sure fought. But no, rewatching it now as an adult, there was no fighting in it. And I mean, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles were a little luckier because they were a little later in the 80s. But they still had to adhere by really strict regulations that said that you could only, if you're broadcasting or you're broadcasting to children, you could only do certain things. You couldn't have the whole gamut. So yeah, for sure. It wasn't going to be as grimy, gritty, and real as the comic books were. But it's a cool story. Like when you're looking at the history of comic books and you see how, you know, we went through this very restrictive time in the 50s when the comic book, code authority had popped in. And they used it as a propaganda, even though during the World War II, comic books were instrumental propaganda for helping to indoctrinate children into believing in the power of, you know, we can do this as a country. We are going to get through. We're going to get through the war. So it was important to have heroes and have a very clear-cut enemy. And, you know, to go from that to go to the 50s and now saying that now we have to use these, you know, it's a powerful medium, but now we have to use this tool to indoctrinate children into the moral code of society. So now we have our Archie comics and now we have all of these diluted superheroes and it really lacked that grit. But then there was no independent comic book production being produced on a mainstream level. They got rid of the horror comics. They got rid of anything that was cool. And then going into the 60s, it's finally a period when independent comic book artists are banding together and they're fighting back. And my personal favorite story of that time is how Mickey Mouse was the one that everybody went after. I had no idea until I started doing some studying more about comic books. I just loved how almost every independent comic book artist at the time kind of banded together and named the mouse as this unified enemy. But what Mickey Mouse represented was it was representing, you know, children blindly following the government. It was so like you're going to have the kids are just going to be mindless people floating through life and they're not going to have a mind of their own. So
well, it's nice. I mean, not to interrupt, but it's nice you cut to today where now everybody is like, oh, we like Disney. We trust Disney Plus. They're super cool.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Disney Plus. Disney is investing in comics, right? And producing the MCU. And I think they're doing a pretty good job of it.
They're doing a pretty good job. But yeah, I mean, it's still the same thing where everybody, I think, looks at Mickey Mouse, looks at Disney as the opposite of counterculture, their culture. I am curious, not to cut ahead, though, but why Kevin Eastman? Why Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles? Why get that?
What?
No, hold on.
We just covered it.
I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm just saying why, for you, do you think that was that flashpoint that was important to talk about on the podcast as something that became that crux between counterculture and pop culture?
Okay, so both Chrissy and I we loved Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles when we were little. We were obsessed with it in very different ways. I'm a weird, very like here I am, very honest kind of person. So which is, good. I think, what makes me entertaining. But also I realize that some of the things that come out of my mouth are like, people will be like, oh, that was weird. So this is how it relates to comic books. To Kevin Eastman and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. So I was a young child when it came out and I was so obsessed. Not only did I want to be April O'Neil, I was in love with Michelangelo, like obsessively in love. I was like, I'm going to eat pizza. I'm going to be his perfect girl. We're going to go to prom together. It's going to be amazing. And I didn't really find the comedy of that until I was older. And I was like, my first like sexual awakening as a child was Michelangelo from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. So
I don't want to get into it too much, but Pete was Raphael and I was Donatello, but go ahead.
Now as an adult, as an adult woman, I have to say Raphael could get it. Yeah, I'd hit that. Okay. If we had to choose a new turtle.
Of course.
So we both had like these obsessive passions for the series itself. And it was really, really wonderful to be able to sit and talk to the man who created it, one of the co-creators behind it. And it was a really special experience for both of us because we were able to kind of indulge in our fandom in a way that we don't often get that opportunity. Like there's certain things in life that you love, right? Now, if I got a chance to meet the woman that voiced Jem from Jem and the Holograms, I might also lose my shit. Great series, completely under, like, people sleep on that series. No one talks about it enough, but it's a great series. Now, if I met her, truly, truly outrageous. Oh my gosh, don't even get me started on Jem, but obsessed.
It was a great show.
It was a great show. There was a car chase in every episode. There was a very bizarre love triangle between Jem, Jerrica, and Rio. And if anybody who's watching this right now and don't know who any of these characters were, Jerrica was the daughter of a wealthy philanthropist and the CEO of a highly successful record company who had an untimely demise. No one knows why. So he gifted her his label and also the Starlight Foundation, which was also their orphanage because he was a philanthropist, and also gifted her a mysterious box that contained two earrings. And once she put them on, an apparition appeared before her and instructed her and her friends to follow her to an abandoned drive-in movie theater, where she proceeded to drive through a wall, much to the terrifying delight of the girls in the car. They're like, what are we doing? We're going to die. But yet they still drove through the wall. Shock. It was a hologram. The machine, the apparition is named Synergy. It was her father's last great invention. And the myth of Jem the Holograms is born, mostly because she had to become a pop star so that she could have the money to pay for the orphanage and keep the kids safe. And also, she had to wrench this is what happens. You mentioned Jem and the Holograms, but this is the other important thing.
She also
had to make money.
I love nerdy rants.
And this one, again, don't sleep on the series. But anyway, she also had to make money to get her record label back from her dad's former assistant, who had done a hostile takeover and took over the label and started to do his own band called the Misfits, And for some inexplicable reason, their jealousy of Jem and the Holograms mostly just translates in them trying to kill Jem in every single episode. So they're very dramatic. Yeah. So Jem is Jerrica's alter ego. Rio is Jerrica's boyfriend, who also falls in love with Jem. Nobody really thinks this is bizarre until in the second season. They really do tackle it with a beautiful song and music video, because also in every episode of Jem is a very trippy music video.
Very tripped out.
Now, as a follow-up, and this is getting slightly too far afield, but what did you think of the 2015 movie, the live action?
Don't even get me on that one. It was obtuse. It was wrong on so many levels. I feel like they never even saw the cartoon in the first place. I don't think they looked at the reboot of the comic book. Was it Kim Thompson who illustrated that? Jem is now this punk rock superstar. Also incredible.
That was great.
There's so much great source material. And yet they decided that, no, we don't need any of it. Let's just make a show where Jem, I don't know, it's not even worth explaining.
I'm probably selling myself down the river here, and I cannot remember this at all. Like, at this point, I've written so many articles, these things pass me by, but I looked it up really quickly, and at the time I was working for MTV, and my review of Jem and the Holograms, the headline is 8 Reasons I, a Grown Man, Loved Jem and the Holograms. So, wow. I don't know, I guess at the time...
Were you a big fan of the show? I'm probably wrong.
I never watched the original show.
Well, that's why you didn't watch the original show. That's why. I'm sorry. Yeah,
there's so many things about it that just make no sense.
I don't stand by that review. I'm just saying.
I felt the same way when I saw Transformers, the first Transformers movie. I was like, who the fuck is this for? This is the one I watched as a kid.
I love that too. I guess I just have no taste. Maybe that's the problem.
How dare. Don't say that about yourself. There's something called manifestation. Mm-hmm. You have great taste. Never put yourself down,
thank
man.
You. Thank you.
I got you.
I don't agree, but I agree with the sentiment behind what you're saying.
Back to TMNT, though, and the Kevin Eastman interview. So talk a little bit about, from this interview, what you got or what you laid down in terms of this being that flashpoint, this being this important crux.
It was, well, for us, obviously, it was really important because we were excited to talk to somebody who had such a pivotal piece in our childhoods and our lives. And the other thing that was really incredible about it was talking to him about the influence of being an independent comic book artist and then coming up still when things were still a little bit restricted and there were still a lot of mainstream comics that were kind of dominating the airwaves, but how they just kind of came through and the process of rethinking Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles in a way that was more palatable to children. So it is interesting to talk to somebody who's creator, and they also, he still has such a love affair for the characters and such an intimate relationship with them that to us, they are characters in a show. To him, it was very much as if he's talking about a child or like it's something he brought into the world, which was really touching and really beautiful to hear because it's, I mean, just to be able to hold audience with somebody who created such a pivotal cultural product was incredibly special. So we walked away really understanding, like feeling that, you know, and I haven't talked to a lot of comic book. I have my own love for the genre. But a lot of comic book creators, I don't necessarily have conversations with every single day, but I really loved how he has a sense of the history, how he fits into that history and where he sees it going in the future. And I think he is, what I took from it is that I think he's very much excited about being able to create an environment where there isn't the same sort of restrictions anymore. There aren't the same sort of rules anymore, that you can create for different age groups, that there isn't the same stigmas that are attached to creating comic books as there was once was. So it's not like he has to stay in that realm of, okay, now we had the comics, we had the television show, and that television show really spoke to kids like 8 to 15, whatever the age range is. And now he's able to re-envision this and work with other people, showrunners who are able to re-envision his entire legacy and products to fit with new generations. While I did not watch the new movies because I'm a bit of a dork for the old, everything old, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I tried to watch the new cartoon series and it really upset me on a few levels. Oh, I was left with a few questions. The one where everybody's like, I don't know, the turtles look weird and then April's like a kid. And I didn't even stick around for 15 minutes of the show to even bother. I was like, okay, this is not for me. This is like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle Light.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's been a couple different iterations, and like, I agree with you. Some of them are like big blocky characters, but like a couple of them that are on Nickelodeon have been really well done. So,
really?
There's definitely kind of like, there's a big range, but you can find a sweet spot for yourself for sure.
I mean, if you make a recommendation, I will watch it.
Okay. Yeah. I don't have it all memorized, but yeah, like there's definitely some, as someone who was a huge fan, and then like a little disappointed in some of the series, but I love the old stuff. The Nickelodeon stuff where they're kind of like smaller, more adorable, kind of like a bug-eyed a little bit. That's the one that's really well done. So
interesting.
I
will say, I don't know, while we're giving recommendations, I don't know if you checked out this one, but is it the last Ronin, the thing?
The new project.
For anybody who's listening or watching, I'll just mention, just to clarify, that's a book that's coming out right now, I think, from IDW, Kevin Eastman is working on it?
Yep.
So it's one
turtle.
They
team back up for it, yeah.
Kind of. It's one turtle alone.
He got the okay.
I think they're working off of an old storyboard is what's going on.
Yeah, it was like a story they had in the 80s and they wanted to finish. Yeah,
But it's basically like old man Raphael. Is it Raphael who survives? Or is it Michelangelo? I think it's Michelangelo. So it's old man Logan, except it's old man Michelangelo going through a post-apocalyptic
set. Then also the new stuff with Jenica is great for Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. There's real, I love how, like, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles doesn't go away. It gets a little quiet for a little bit, and then it comes back. It's But, yeah, like you're saying, such a huge icon. I know when we, like, trapped him at a Comic-Con, he was... cornering him in an artist alley, and he wanted to talk a lot about his new stuff, which I was very excited about. But also, all I wanted to do was talk to him about, like, some of the things that, like, as a kid, just really opened my mind. And, like,
now, Pete, when you did that, was he like, "Oh, you're the first person that's asked me about this"? Yeah, thank you.
He was just like, "Man, I created a monster. Look what I've done."
Now, I do want to ask, and I don't know if you have a perspective on this necessarily, Marie, but just from talking about comic books, when you're talking about the time period, as you were mentioning, with Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles coming out, and around that, there was a lot of underground comics with an X or otherwise that were coming out, and there really was very much a counterculture for comics. Is that something that in any form could exist now in the same way and be culturally relevant in the same way?
Well, I mean, that's the question. That is a creative solve, I would say, to a very interesting question. You know, for a little while, I thought that the counterculture of comic books would sit within the Japanese genre of anime. And if you really want to get into the sub of hentai, because it's different than what North American comic books are. And for a long time, it had a very niche subcultural group that was kind of gravitating towards it. But I mean, anybody who's watching Netflix now knows that Netflix is diving heavily into producing anime into live action series. Cowboy Bebop came out, which I personally love. So we really have here's the thing. When it comes to a counterculture, there has to be a solve that art like comic books was able to tackle. And if we're taking a look at where we came from, it was so much easier to have a counterculture back in the day with the independent, like Fritz the Cat and Zippy the Pinhead, and I'm trying to think of like other like underground comics. So much easier for those to come out because really it was a protest of freedom of speech, the ability to create and have the ability to be an artist in a public forum without censorship. So that is kind of where that counterculture and that independence sat. And once we were moving through, it was we as a society were starting to tackle how we wanted to teach morality to children with the understanding that somehow the only people consuming this type of medium, comics and comic books, are children. So there was like a lot of control, misunderstanding, and a lot of resistance to artists. So it made that kind of scene really easy to develop. Where we sit right now, I'm trying to think, like, what are we not allowed to do? Not everyone can smoke weed in some places. Like, you have to kind of look at what it is that we are prohibited from doing as a society, and that we as a society, as a community, I'll say, don't agree with that legality. And that's when the counterculture start to form. It's a response to, like, we'll say, governmental oppression to some degree, where there's a group of people to say, like, no, this is not right for the greater good of humanity. We as a society believe differently. And so they usually will form these countercultures and then they'll go through. But right now, as I said, I'm like, what is it? Obviously.
Podcasts probably, right? Podcasts are really counterculture.
They're a subculture.
Yes, they're subculture, yes.
Unless, of course, you had like some sort of crazy underground one on, you know, the Tor network or something. And it was like this underground only murderers and going on and sharing their podcast. That would be a weird little counterculture.
I mean, that's a good concept. I feel like people would listen to it. Boy. I'm just saying. Oh, I don't know. It's just a thought.
If there is anybody that knows a podcast that exists only on the Tor, let me know. I will go and check it out. The only thing about going on the Tor, I realized, is once I did it a few years ago when I was doing my old show, I actually got a letter from the government. So they were like, really? Oh, what are you doing? And I was just looking at the Silk Road. But at the time, what I didn't know was there was that whole piece between the Silk Road and what was the other one? Atlantis. Someone had an aqua type name. Anyway, and the guy who owned Silk Road had ordered a hit through the Silk Road on the owner of the other marketplace. It was like Amazon for illegal goods.
Okay.
Yeah. And I was surfing on there time. I was like, oh, what is this all about? Like, we should be doing a piece on this. And yeah. So they were like,
doing research. You were doing research.
Just to pitch you guys on something. What about a show where there's an FBI agent and he has a podcast where he invites murderers on in order to catch them?
I would put together a fiction podcast around that in a snap.
I'm just pitching it out to you. This has been really fascinating to talk about.
Yeah.
Other than Kevin Eastman, though, you have new episodes that are out. You have one about sex, I believe, that came out the previous week. What else can people look forward to if they're checking out Alt Pop Repeat?
Oh, my gosh. We're going through all of the countercultures one at a time. If you love MMA fighting, we'll tell you how that came about. If you love my favorite particular shows is the punk episode featuring Biff Naked. We did a cannabis show with Tommy Chong. Nice. And if you particularly have a love for hip hop, definitely check out Hip Hop Number One with DMC from Run DMC.
He's a huge comic book fan.
He's a huge comic book fan because even he talked about the influence of comic books on his hip hop career.
Yeah, he sold
Pete. Best interview I've ever seen Pete do with DMC. This is just real quick for anybody who's listening to this, and I feel like we told this story before, but most of the time Pete was our floor reporter when we were doing comic cons, and then we were having DMC come in to talk about his comic book, and Pete was like, I want to be in the room, and we were like, okay, we'll see what happens. And then Pete was like, immediately DMC was like, I love you, Pete. We're talking about comic books. You know about rap. It was great. It was a really good interview, Pete. You did a good job.
A great man. Thanks.
Yeah, really unbelievable.
So wonderful. Yeah. And it's great that you had an opportunity to connect with him like on that level, because I'm sure most of the time when people are talking to him, they're talking to him about hip hop. They're talking to him about the Beastie Boys. They're talking to him, you know, they're not talking to him about his love for comic books and his comic book or any of that stuff. So that's dope, man.
Most of it, though, unfortunately, was him talking about his love for Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, which was unrelated. And Kevin Eastman was standing there in the corner. Like,
yeah, he was just like, what's my turn?
Did he say that he had a love for Michelangelo?
He took him to prom. Can you believe
that? Oh, man.
It's crazy.
You know, it's strange child crushes. And I keep looking over in the chat. I was like, is anyone going to say what their weird child cartoon crush was? And
By the way, someone was asking what you were drinking.
Oh, I'm drinking it is a sparkling non-alcoholic cider that I have graciously kissed with a very alcoholic rum.
Oh, nice.
Ooh, very nice.
I feel like it's festive, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Before we let you go, I feel like we should admit our strange cartoon crushes on the air. Pete, do you have one?
Should.
I don't.
Yeah.
No.
No?
I mean,
I don't know. I mean, comic book wise, Kitty Pride is probably mine. I had a crush on Kitty Pride. Yeah. Absolutely. Pete?
I
don't know. I mean, it would be, I don't know. There was a lot of different moments that were kind of like, what's happening? Where it was a little ridiculous, where I was like, I'm keep buying Psylocke comics. What's going on? Oh, I understand.
Oh, I'm going through changes.
I'm going
through changes right now.
It's great. Not like you're playing Metroid super, super fast to get to the end and see the part where she takes off
the sexiest moment in video games. She takes off the helmet. And you're like, what?
I know. I
this
didn't even
justifies
know
justifies my attraction the entire game.
I was the entire time. I was like, at the very end of it, I was like, "Whoa, she's a girl!" And my entire perspective of the entire game changed, and I felt so validated in that moment. Mm-hmm. But I didn't know if you played it faster, you'd see her take off more clothes. I don't know if I'd like that personally. I was like, she didn't need to do that. But it is funny now, like looking back.
But Metroid was the first really feminist game. I think we could all agree to that.
Yeah, I think so. And also Princess Peach, I feel like she was done dirty. I mean, she was a great character to play.
Wait, yeah, her floating was so needed in a lot of different
She was the one that I always played in Super Mario 2. And hopefully Anya Taylor-Joy will do her justice in the movie. Very excited about that.
Yeah. I mean, it was tough when she was like yanking mushrooms, but other than that, the floating was huge.
It was clutch. Anyway, on that note, I'm sure it's time for me to go, but I could sit here and
I would chat
with you guys all night long. It was such a pleasure. And thank you.
Yeah. Thank you so much for coming on. And just plug your stuff before you go. Where can people check out All Pop Repeat?
Well, you're welcome to listen to me on All Pop Repeat with my BFF to life is Chrissy Newton. It's at altpoprepeat.com. We're on all socials for the Alt Pop Repeat. Somehow no one else had that name. Surprise, surprise. You can follow me. My online name is Karma Cake, like good karma and delicious cake. Although I don't talk about anything to do with food, but I do talk about pop culture history. And sometimes I pose with like burgers, so you'll see. I'll just leave it at that.
Great.
Love it. Marie, thank you so much for coming on the show. I love the podcast. I'm very excited to chat about it. And have a great night. Go eat your food. Eat your food.
Enjoy
your move. Trust me. I've got it's all lined up here.
Have a good night.
Bye.
We'll do you too. Right. Bye.
Once again, that is Marie Nicola from Alt Pop Repeat. You can check that out pretty much everywhere.
Bruce Wayne may appear to be a wealthy playboy, but beneath this facade, his true identity is that of the Batman, waging an endless war against crime. Join the Caped Crusader and Batman The Audio Adventures, the first scripted audio original featuring Batman and his villainous rogues gallery in a world premiere story of life and death in Gotham City, debuting exclusively on HBO Max. Starring Jeffrey Wright as Batman and a who's who of incredible Saturday Night Live alums, this rollicking adventure told across 10 episodes is written and directed by Emmy winner Dennis McNicholas, includes devilishly delightful original music by Doug Bossi, and performances by Rosario Dawson, John Leguizamo, Chris Parnell, Melissa Villaseñor, Seth Meyers, Jason Sudeikis, Brooke Shields, Fred Armisen, and many, many more. Go to hbomax.com/Batman Audio Adventures for more and stream Batman the Audio Adventures only on HBO Max.
And folks, we're going to move on with our next section, which is my favorite section because you all make it up. It's your audience question. And for audience questions, all you got to do is drop a question and ask a question over here on Crowdcast. I see a couple already. Or on YouTube, you can drop it in the comment section and I will keep an eye on that. But first, Pete, what is the red concoction you are drinking? Is it a red? Code red and vodka?
It's close. It's vodka, it's Mountain Dew, and it's XXX vitamin water.
Oh my God, Pete.
I'm having a tough day. I just needed a little pick-me-up, you know what I mean? A little.
Yeah, well, you got to get your vitamins, so.
That's right, yeah.
This is finally melted enough, this sleigh ride, that I could actually.
Oh, there you go. There you go. Enjoy it.
This is so good. This is such a good drink. I highly recommend this to everybody. Definitely.
Was it worth the wait?
It was. It's still basically solid, but I was able to get a little bit in my mouth, so I'm feeling pretty good. It's very creamy, and the cinnamon and the nutmeg on the top are very nice. Okay, this is from Kevin over here on Crowdcast. What's an adaptation of a comic that you think really misses everything about the original, for good or ill? Adaptation of a comic that really misses it. I'll just throw out Inhumans. I was thinking about that the other day on TV. I had sort of put that out of my memory. And the thing about Inhumans, if anybody heard that it was terrible and never checked it out, the thing that blew my mind about it is the concept of the show is, what if the Inhumans all hung out on Earth? And it's like, what's this, the most boring idea for Inhumans possible? They start off with, initially, like Game of Thrones on the moon, that's a cool idea. And then they're like, nope, instead, Medusa loses her hair. Everybody kind of has having problems with their powers. And then they all go to Earth. It's like, why are you overcomplicating this?
Yeah, they live on the moon. That is cool. Go there. Like,
yes, not the least of which, it looked terrible. Like, the other thing I was remembering was they made this big thing of, it's the first Marvel TV show being shown in IMAX. And it looked terrible in IMAX. It looked even worse than it did on TV. So bad decisions all over the place. Pete?
Agree.
Nothing else. There's no other adaptations.
Well, I mean, you know, Transformers, It's not, you know, it was, I don't know if it was a comic book first, but it was a cartoon first. It was a toy first, then a cartoon. But, you know,
that first was it was a real thing with real space robots. Then, right. then it was a toy.
Yeah. First it was reality. Then they turned into a toy. Yeah, that's just, I don't know. I mean, there's been stuff that's been like heartbreaking or disappointing, but as far as not to the source material, that's the first thing that kind of like makes me think that was a ripoff.
Yeah. Cool. Good question, Kevin. This is from Jolene. What do you think that the MCU has seemed to abandon the idea of secret identities for the most part, like in a world where magic gods and interdimensional travel exist? Is it really beyond belief that some heroes are just able to keep their real name secret? I think, just to throw it out there, and this is only because I watched the original Tobey Maguire Spider-Man the other day and was kind of reminded that every Spider-Man movie, he ends up with his mask off or being like, wait, I'm Peter Parker, to the point where like the beginning of that movie, which mind you, that movie is great. But the beginning of that movie, he goes to a wrestling match, signs up under his own name, Peter Parker, to win it, takes off his mask to several people and is introduced as Spider-Man. And then somehow immediately after that, when a guy shows up in a very similar costume calling himself Spider-Man, nobody knows who he is. So to me, that sort of thing, like, that's wild, that's ridiculous, but all of these movies have made it so that the hero can take off their mask a lot because you want to see the star of the movie. And when they're doing action sequences, they put on their mask so that you can have the stuntman or CGI jumping around and doing stuff. So ultimately, I think that has become part of the way superhero movies do things. So it's easier to just take off Spider-Man's mask, take off Iron Man's mask, take off whoever's mask, so that they are an actor and they can act and they can emote with their faces. And that's kind of what it's become. Pete?
I mean, I hear what you're saying, and I feel like it's definitely, you know, I personally don't watch a movie and be like, man, I wish I could see Tobey Maguire's face more. You know what I mean? Like, I don't care if fucking Robert Downey Jr. never flips up his thing. You know what I mean?
Flips up his thing and he has no face under there.
It could just be old, you know, the question. But I just think it's like, you know, there is that thing of like, you know, the actor wants to kind of be able to emote and it gets tiresome with the mask. But I just think that like, yeah, you know, it can... You know, half a dozen one way or the other. But I just think that, like, what I would really appreciate is, regardless of whose face or whether it's a stunt double or whatever, we're just getting sick fight sequences and kind of, like, nice moments with the character. So
I think, ultimately, the secret identities thing, if it's important to the character, you got to do it. Like, clearly, it, regardless of how they actually execute it, it is important to Spider-Man to the point that in the last movie, we had that huge cliffhanger of the post credits where his identity was revealed to the entire world. That's the entire crux of the plot of the third movie. I think it's important to him because he has people, he's down on the ground, he's in high school, there are people he wants to protect. Captain America, there's no reason for him to have a secret identity. Iron Man, kind of the same thing. And that's been a point of the movies. Like, the Iron Man movies, I think, have played with that really well, where Tony Stark is an aggressive jerk who's like, here's my address, come and find me, Mandarin. And then the Mandarin blows up his house and he pays for that, you know? So I do think there's consequences for it that they have dealt with. But I also think it's okay to kind of blast past that. You don't need
to have a secret classic identity. You know, like Clark Kent, Superman thing, glasses. You know what I mean? We're just going to kind of not pay attention to that because we want to enjoy the other stuff, you know?
Exactly.
You don't want to think about that too hard because it's kind of very obvious who's Batman.
It's kind of like the killing debate on TV shows where it's like, should we?
You mean like you should kill, if you're going to kill, you should kill like a couple people because if you're, you know, you might as well, you know, go all the way. Is that what you're saying? Is that the
ultimate? Yeah. Should you kill a couple of people or a lot of people?
Just one, or if you're doing it.
No, the whole thing about, particularly on superhero TV shows, we're like, are you going to cross the line? Are you going to kill a man? What are you going to do? We've seen that one kabillion times. I don't need to see it on TV shows. It's been covered. Like, it's fine. We're good there. And it's sort of the same thing with Secret Identities, where it is an interesting concept, but it has been covered already. We have dealt with that in multiple shows and movies and everything, as well as all of the comic books. So unless you could find an original riff on it, I'd rather you just not talk about the secret identity or have the character not have a secret identity.
That's why I'm looking forward to this new Batman, because the new take is it is we, the audience, are the pearls and we're falling apart and breaking onto the alley floor. You know what I mean?
Well, and also, instead of saying I'm Batman, he says, I'm Bruce Wayne.
By the way.
Just, you know. All right. Good question. Let's go over to YouTube. This is from Nelson Martinez. Yeah, I've been obsessed with Yellow Jackets. Alex, what do you look forward to happening in the show? And how much have you seen? Pete, have you checked it out yet? Pete, have you watched Yellow Jackets on Showtime?
Not a big fan of bees and hornets, to tell you the truth. So, yeah, I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, it's a live hive. #livehive. And it's just a hive of Yellow Jackets. No, it's
hive mind mentality.
Fantastic show. Everybody should be watching Yellow Jackets on Showtime. It is about a girls' soccer team that crashes in the middle of the Canadian wilderness. Their plane crashes. And then
don't tell me they have to eat the kids to survive.
Some weird things happen that are pretty gory and gross. I won't say what they are. But things get very dark very quickly, but you don't get to see everything that happens because it takes place in multiple timelines. It also takes place 25 years later when we see some of these kids were rescued, are alive after their ordeal. I believe they were in the woods for 2 years, we find out. Oh, and as adults, some of them are played by Juliette Lewis, Christina Ricci, Melody Linsky, a couple of other amazing people. And somebody is trying to reveal what they did back in the woods, and you still don't know exactly what it is, even several episodes in, but so, it's great. It's like Lost meets Lord of the Flies. Awesome.
It's not a comedy, is what you're saying.
No, there is some funny stuff in it that happens sometimes, but it's horrific drama. The first episode is directed by, and one of the executive producers is Karen Kasama, who directed Jennifer's Body, among other things, and she does an awesome job with the pilot. I think I've watched the first 6 episodes by this point. I don't remember what they broadcast, to be honest with you, but so good. I've loved every single one of them more and more. The mysteries are weird and disturbing and upsetting. The performances are good. Absolutely one of the best shows on TV right now. Highly recommend it.
Whoa.
So, so good.
You watch much TV, too. That's
I watch too much TV, buddy. Let's go over to a question from Crowdcast from Stray Bullet. If you go back to any era of comics, what era would you go back to? Or is keeping continuity moving more fun?
Wait, what's the second part of that question?
Would you rather just keep moving forward through the continuity of comics? Or is there an era you would rather comics go back to?
Okay. Yeah, I like where we are now. You know, I like a lot of things when you go back in time, you know, it's not as much fun because they're sexist or more racist or more fucked up. So, now's good. So I'm chilling here, but I do like when they do old timey riffs that are, enjoyable now because they're more updated. But yeah, I think that's a good way to kind of honor the past with, keeping things a little bit more enjoyable for everybody.
Yeah, I agree. Like we were actually talking about in the interview with Marie, I think things are always of their time, right? Like they come up for a specific reason and they're reacting to something. The 80s reacting to the 70s, the 90s are reacting to the 80s, so on and so forth. Or creators who grew up in a certain way are bringing things back in a different way. That's why you see a lot of riffs on the Clone Saga, for example, where people are really trying to rejuvenate that storyline because they read it so much in the 90s and it was terrible. And they're like, you know what? Some of these ideas are actually not so bad. So that sort of thing I think is okay. But to your point, Pete, you got to keep moving forward.
I do want to go back to what you said there. Marie, one of the best kind of opening reveals, the mouthful of noodles. I mean, that was hysterical. That's comedy gold there. Oh, me? What? Camera's on? That was really funny.
We got to start doing that on the show. We're going to steal that bit. Yeah, every show we open up just mouthful of noodles.
Yeah, whatever. It's that was a. I mean,
they
was
looked
pretty
delicious.
Good.
They looked delicious. So very excited.
She was doing it right, man.
She was doing it right.
Doing
we did have one more question that I wanted to bring up that popped up here in the comments on Crowdcast. This is from Brad. Now, I'll ask the question, but I'll give some framing for the question. Brad says, what's your favorite George Perez comic? I don't know if everybody heard this news today, but George Perez, and this is awful, awful sad news. He has cancer, and he has said he's elected not to take treatment and believes the doctors have told him he has anywhere from 6 months to a year to live at this point. It is a harrowing, awful note to read that he put up on Facebook. But one of the things that was so incredible about what he said is he said, listen, I'm obviously not doing that well. I can't honor commissions that I was going to do at conventions a couple of years from now. So we're going to refund all that money. But I'm also going to really try to make as many appearances as I can, hug as many people as I can, and say hello to all of you, and sign as many things that I can before, you know, I go. So really, really hard, awful news to read today. He was so wonderful and so positive about it. But obviously he is, if you don't know who he is and you're listening to this, that's okay. Look him up. George Perez is an absolute legend. One of the best creators of all time. Even if you don't know his name necessarily, you've seen his drawings that are packed to the gills with superheroes, particularly his DC work, though he's done plenty of other things.
I immediately think of, you know, DC, Justice League, that kind of like just group stuff, but just a really unbelievable artist. That's it's really hard to hear, man. That is really tough.
Absolutely awful. I mean, the thing that I would recommend, the first thing that comes to mind to me when I think of George Perez is actually his run on Wonder Woman, which,
oh yeah,
it's not necessarily under the radar or anything like that, but I feel like people talk about a lot of other runs of Wonder Woman first before they discuss his. But
a lot of the big like DC events, you know, like
just real quick, the one thing that I was going to say about his Wonder Woman run is for me, that was kind of my in on Wonder Woman. I read that and fell in love with that in trades because I didn't know anything about Wonder Woman and I knew who George Perez was. And I was just kind of blown away by how foundational everything that he lays in there is in terms of Wonder Woman and the ties.
You didn't know who Wonder Woman was, but you knew who George
Perez
was?
I hadn't really read any Wonder Woman comics long term.
Oh, okay. All right.
So I kind of went back to that and I was like, all right, there's these old Wonder Woman comics. I guess I'll check them out. And they were bowled me over. They're absolutely fantastic. So if you've ever, if you never checked those out, highly recommend checking those out. Pete, any other recommendations or just generally everything?
Yeah, I would just say find out about them because unbelievable art. Really just huge events it was at the center of, and you know let's celebrate him while he's still here, because just absolutely magic to the comic book world.
Absolutely. All right, folks, I think we're going to move on to our next section, which is trivia, and for that we're going to turn over to Pete LePage.
All right. This is the part where we get back to you, the lovely audience. It's this opportunity to win $25 online to Midtown Comics, because if you had $25, you go to a comic book shop, get yourself some comics. But, you know, with everything going on and being in different places, going online shopping is the way to do it. So, Alex, do we have, are we going to pick from the audience, or do we have a person?
No, we have a contestant here today. His name is Brad Trechak. I think I got that right. We'll see. But I invited him into the stream, and he'll be competing for a $25 gift card today. We'll see if he wins. Do you think this is going to be the week that somebody doesn't win? Hello, Brad.
Hey. Hi there. Can you
How
hear
are you
me?
Doing?
Yes. Love your glow shirt.
Okay, just checking.
Yeah, great glow shirt, dude.
Yeah, amazing show.
Thank you.
Yes, fun.
I
under
love
the radar.
That show. I'm so sorry it didn't get a fourth season.
Yeah.
Me too. Fun under the radar fact here. Kimmy Gatewood, who's on Glow, actually did the theme music for Comic Book Club. So when you hear the Comic Book Club theme, that is Kimmy, one of the Beatdown Biddies.
Biddies. Rebecca Johnson, also the other Biddy, who was huge at the Pit when we started, Alex.
Yeah, and I don't know if this is true, but I heard a rumor that the reason she got the part on Glow was because of doing the Comic Book Club theme. Is that Droopy?
That is not true at all. Oh, no, okay. No. All geez, right. Take it oh, easy. Well.
The art world is truly a small world.
Exactly. Yeah. All right. I am going to turn it over to Pete now, Brad, so okay. he can do a little mm-hmm. trivia for you.
All right. Great. Okay. So today's trivia is on topical comic news and a small nod to the legend David Gulpilil. R.I.P. All right. So please listen to all three options before making your selection, okay? Here we go. Question number one. In the upcoming Star Wars number 20 comic written by Charles Soule, who is teased on the cover? Is it A, Chewie, B, Luke, or is it C, Reginald Bell Johnson? So it's either A, don't pick it, or it's B, Luke.
Is it Luke?
It is!
Wow.
That's right. Use the force. All right. Here we go. Question number two. According to Newsarama, who was quoted as saying the journey of the Krakoan Age is far from over? Is it A, Jordan D. White, B, Daniel Warren Johnson, or C, Caitlin Clark? So it's either A, if you would like to continue to earn $25, or you could be completely wrong. But also give a shout out to an amazing comic book creator, Daniel Warren Johnson.
So I'm going to guess the answer is A.
A is correct.
Yeah.
And you know, I don't know how you're feeling about X-Men right now. It's either bad news or horrible news that we're going to still stay on Fuck Island for a while. So, you know, give or take. Here we go. Last one. DC is releasing an 80-page anthology called Tis the Season to be freezing. One of the stories has Bizarro versus blank. Is it A, seasonal depression, B, polar boy, or is it C, Steve Rackman? So it's either A, which I can't believe is true, but it is true, or is it B, polar boy?
I'm going to guess A, seasonal depression.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to buy the comic just for that to see how Bizarro is going to take down seasonal depression, and I hope he can.
I mean, is it a personification of seasonal depression, or is it just seasonal depression?
You're going to have to buy the book.
Oh, okay.
No spoilers here. Right. But you can use your $25 gift card from Midtown Comics to buy that book is the amazing part. Do you have a guess to the secret movie that Pete was indicating with his third answers, by any chance?
I don't even remember what his third answers are.
Neither do I, but I'm going to guess based on what Kevin said, it's Crocodile Dundee.
That's right. It is the 1986 smash hit Crocodile Dundee.
Remembered, of course, for a role by David Gulpilil. Right?
Yeah. Are you fucking kidding me? He was a huge part of that movie.
All I remember for that movie is Crocodile Dundee and that's not a knife. This is a knife.
What about I don't need a gun, I got a dunk. That was a great line too.
Does David Gulpilil say that?
No, he's the one that said, hey, Mickey scared the shit out of me. He's the Aborigine guy who is super hilarious. Oh, come on, man. I mean, who are you even? I mean, just do you even remember the movie at all?
No, I just said I don't remember the movie.
Well, then maybe really don't talk that. About it then.
All right, fair enough. Brad, thank you so much for coming in. Congratulations on the gift card. Have a great night.
Thanks. Thank you very much.
Great to see
you. All right. There we go. Now, if you would like to win a gift card, I'm going to drop the link into the chat here. And also, you can check it out on our Twitter feed at Comic Book Live. But new comics are coming out. Pete, what are you looking forward to? What are you looking forward to checking out this week?
Oh, man, there is a ton of great talked about. I was also, I'm excited about the new Batman direction. Or I could just leave the show and come back. Hey! It's interesting, Batman's leaving Gotham, and that's a bold move. So we'll see what happens.
Great. I'm looking forward to Made in Korea number 6 from Image Comics. This is one of my favorite sci-fi books on the stands right now. It's dark. It's interesting. It's got some fascinating things to say about identity. And we're going to be talking about both of those books, as well as plenty of other books in our Stack podcast, which rolls out Wednesdays at 9 a.m., both in the Comic Book Club feed and in its own dedicated Stack feed. And folks, that is it for this week's show. A couple of people we want to thank. We want to thank Marie Nicola from Alt Pop Repeat for coming on. Also, John Lazar from Odd Yards. Yeah. Don't forget to check out his Kickstarter. It's only got a couple of hours left. Next week on the show, we're going to have two more great guests for you here. Jared Beloff is going to be here to talk about Marvelous Versus, set up by one of our fine listeners. And also, Peggy Lee is going to be here. She is a jewelry designer who has done pieces for Riverdale, Titans, Buffy, and many more. And she may be giving away a surprise gift to one lucky viewer who comes to the show.
What about a co-host? One lucky co-host?
Just a listener. Sorry about that.
Well, that's nice for people, you know?
It is nice for people. A couple of things we want to plug. Marvel Vision, our Marvel podcast, is recapping Hawkeye every Wednesday. Also, Riverdale After Dark, our Riverdale podcast, is recapping Riverdale after
this. I can't wait to yell at you about the next step.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Thank you for teeing that up with no explanation. But Riverdale After Dark, Tuesday nights at 9 p.m. Patreon.com/comicbookclub. Support this show and all the shows we do. iTunes, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow. Don't forget to leave us a question or review request in the iTunes reviews. At Comic Book Live on Twitter, Comic Book Club Live on Instagram, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, hashtag Glow Season 4, please.
Yeah, take it away, Kevin Gaylord.